Hello, and welcome to episode 190, I think, of Checkpoint Chat. I didn't look before this. 191 of Checkpoint Chat. My name is Alessandro Barbosa. I'm joined in person by Matthew Figuera. Sure.
You're going to give me some feedback there. ESCOM's great with their load shedding. So, yeah, this is the dire times. We've gone back to how we used to operate pre-COVID, where we actually caught in person. So on that, if the audio sounds a bit different,
it might be slightly different. We're
like literally sitting next to each other.
Yeah.
Without a mixer.
Yeah. We are literally recording on two separate computers because got all the stuff for the old mixer, brought that thing out of retirement, and then I forgot one of the XLR cables. And it's like, really?
You even messaged me this morning saying, do you have a printer cable for the mic? Not for the microphone, for the mixer, sorry. Which I did. But then my best is you open your bag, you're like, oh no.
Yeah. It was at that moment I was like, oh no. I've actually forgot the one thing that I did have and then we did need, and then
it's teething issues like we used to have in the good old days.
Yeah. It feels right. But it's so annoying because it is just like I had load shedding now between 8 and 10. Matty had it between 10 and 12. So it's like, we don't have a choice, really.
And it was one of the things of even in the event that load shedding does go down to like stage two,
it doesn't change.
Yeah. So
it did mean I had to wake up at a glorious 6 a.m. this morning to get everything ready and come here. It was so cold. Oh my God. I think when I was driving here, my car like dings when it goes below, I think 4 degrees. And it did that almost immediately as soon as I got into the car. And I was just like, I hate everything.
Right. And then it pinged a few times.
Yeah. Ping. I did drive past a golf course on the way. Yeah. And it was frosty. Just white. Yeah. It was
and
just
I'm sure you saw
everywhere.
Some golfers at like 7.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Man, there could be a cyclone and people will be playing golf. They're like, oh, it's just a little bit of wind. Yeah.
I'll have to adjust my shots accordingly.
Yeah. I'll just hit to the left a little bit. It's fine. Yeah. It's like when there's lightning, they're just like, oh, it's fine if I die. It's okay.
Oh, well, I mean, this golf course, I think most golf courses, you hear a siren. It's actually quite cool for us because we know when it's going to rain. Because we hear it like long before.
I wonder if they have some sort of like sensor that can, because I know you can pick up like certain chemicals in the air that like predict a thunderstorm.
How accurately can we predict the weather?
Oh, not accurately at all.
So why do people put such emphasis on, like, let's see what the weather's going to be next Thursday. I'm like, it's so far. You can't even predict the weather, like, tomorrow.
No,
today
you
can, kind of, but...
You can, I mean, the weather forecasts we get, like, on our phones and stuff come from, like, really advanced satellites and stuff, but even then, it's not... You can do some reading into it. It's because of something called like chaos theory, where there's only a certain degree of things you can predict.
It's like Jurassic Park.
Sort of. Yeah.
Because, well, you've seen the movie, but have you read the actual Jurassic
Park
book? So the good guy, Jeff Goldblum, his whole spiel is that he's a mathematician focusing, or like whose strength is chaos theory.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. And that's exactly that of, you remember the scene from the movie where he drops a droplet of water in his hand.
Yes.
He says, it could run this way, but if I drop another, it'll run the other way.
Yes.
Yeah. So the weather.
Yeah. Essentially, there's so many factors in that come into play that trying to predict all of those factors, it's just like, to a degree, you just can't. It's impossible.
We're getting fresh coffee in person.
Thank you. Feels so good.
Every time Alessandro sees me get a coffee.
I know what it feels like.
Thank you.
But yeah, that's why we can't predict the weather. I mean, when I watch a lot of Formula One, they have their own satellites at the track that try and predict the weather. And even then, they don't.
They have satellites at the track. Do they just like launch them?
I guess they hook into like very advanced weather radars.
These teams don't mess around. They're like, unpack the car, unpack the satellite.
You just watch their radars and it's wild. Like they get like per 10 second intervals, they can see like rain coming in to the track or whatever. So, it's pretty insane.
Well, Formula One's one of those sports I know I need to get into at some stage.
I mean, you don't have to.
I mean, I'd like to, but I remember, so it's funny, I get served a lot of Formula One content on TikTok now. And the actual brand is really good. It's like tongue-in-cheek, behind the scenes, very casual.
Oh, like the official brand. Formula One brand. Their social media is on point. Yeah.
I think it was their account that posted on TikTok, though. It is an interview with Lewis Hamilton, just like somebody saying, explain your steering wheel.
Okay.
First. And you've obviously seen the steering wheels. It's got tons of buttons.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And he tries to, like, dumb it down so that the average person can understand. And he like starts pointing at all these dials, and I was like, yeah, so I need to like push this when I want to change the force of this and this. And like, there's actually a lot of on the fly stuff happening when they drive, which you don't realize.
It's incredible.
They're not just driving.
No, it's kind of insane that they can be going like down a straight at like 250, 260 k's an hour, and they're busy looking at their steering wheel, fiddling with
like,
little dials.
I need to. I mean, in one of those things, I think you were saying he can adjust like his fueling.
Yes.
Which is just like...
And that's one of the more basic settings. They can do things like... They can adjust like brake biases and things like a ton of things on the fly. And I mean, we'll get to this because I've been playing Formula One, but you are given some of those settings in the game. And I'm just like, I can't even manage. Like, I'm like, okay, cool. I need to press two buttons to activate this setting.
Yes.
And that's a very simplified way of getting to that setting in a game while also not crashing into a wall. So yeah, I respect them a lot for how they're able to do that. And every steering wheel is different. So I'm pretty sure he didn't give away everything because there's certain things on the steering wheels that don't want people to know what they do. Because there's obviously in the cars, there's cameras.
Yes.
So at any other point, a team can look at that camera and see him adjusting something and they know what he's adjusted.
Okay.
So they can be like, oh, he's adjusted his fuel. Oh, so he's going to be a bit faster.
Strategy,
yeah, exactly. So they won't.
I hold up. So. But you say, can every team watch every driver's?
Yes.
What?
So even on the broadcast, so on the app, Formula One TV.
Oh, you can sit and bounce.
I can sit and bounce between them.
You can just watch a whole race, just watch it.
Essentially,
from
one perspective, yeah.
That's crazy.
And they've added all sorts of new cameras this season. Like, not every driver has them every weekend, but some drivers have very tiny cameras inside their helmet.
What?
So they sometimes change to it and you get a complete... one-to-one of what they see.
Oh, no.
And they see
it's
nothing.
Terrifying.
It's
yeah.
horrible. Like, and now I saw this week in the added cameras to the pedals in the car. So you can see their feet, how they're moving. Yeah. It's kind of crazy.
That's too much. Where are they going to add a camera next?
I actually don't.
It's like, put a camera.
They put a camera on the wing so you can see like literally by the tire as they're going around curves.
Put a camera in the bathroom. You can see them go to the loo now. Whoa, Hamilton went before the...
put a camera in front of them so you see their mouth moving like when they get thirsty. See them drinking from their little tube.
So when my brother got his PlayStation years ago, it was probably 96, 97 because we had a game. And I always remember it as Formula One 90.
Mm.
I mean, I should go look at footage now. I'm sure that game looks awful about today.
Yeah. Things.
But back then, it's like, whoa.
can't even tell the difference.
But I know one of the features in that game was in first person mode, if the longer the race went on, the more dirt accumulated on the screen.
Oh, that's kind of cool
time. But when I say like dirt, it wasn't how you'd imagine today. Like you can see the build like gradually. It was like literally like a patch of it. And another. And you'd have
square block of dirt.
Yeah, and you'd have to push a button to like, you didn't see a hand animation, the screen was just clear. But even then, as a kid, it's like, these guys can't see anything from these helmets. Like, how do they not die?
Well, nowadays they have this really cool thing where they have like, you know, like when you get new electronics and you peel off that like plastic film when it's new?
Oh,
do they have layers of that on their helmets? So you often see, they'll be going down a straight and they'll grab the side of their helmet and just peel off a thing. And then they have to throw it out the car like strategically so that it doesn't land into one of like their fucking air ducts or their tail wing and like, or hits like an opponent or something
so
like
funny.
That. Yeah.
Now you've taken a sticker off something like a screen or whatever. Okay. With your bare hand struggle. How do they do that with their
gloves? With gloves at 250 k's an hour. And they're just like, they just got to rip it off real quick before they get to a corner. It's something. That sport is really something.
Crazy.
It's got, to me, you know, a lot of people, I don't know, I mean, this is not specific to Formula One, but a lot of people are now real salty that it's more popular. People are like, damn, before Drive to Survive, no one on my Twitter spoke about Formula One. I'm like, who gives a fuck? Like, it's so cool. Imagine that there's having more people
enjoying your sport.
Oh, man. More people talk about it. Like, I can casually bring up Formula One in an office now and people don't be like, oh, that sport. That, yeah, that niche-ass sport. Like, people like, oh, I love this driver, you know?
Yeah.
They didn't get the minutia of the sport.
I think it's
cares?
Really nice. Like, I mean, I don't know. It's you find that this sort of thing happens in everything. It's the same with, like, we're not going to talk about Elden Ring, but I'm going to inject Elden Ring
here. Aren't we?
But, I mean, have you played Elden Ring? But it's the same of Elden Ring is, like, easily From's most mainstream game, like, quote unquote. And you have people, the most hardcore people going like, if you use magic in this game, you're not playing it right. It's like easy mode. If you use the Ashes of War, easy mode. Like,
do people say that?
Yeah.
I mean, playing the game on easy mode then. Hey, well, those Ashes of War saving
my
ass.
I'm like there's a trade-off though, because you know if you use your Ash of War, if I'm not mistaken, bosses have more health. So
wait, hold on. The Ash of War, wait. So if I have one equipped, they have more health.
No, I think if you actually summon. No, wait. Sorry,
you're
if
talking
you
about
summons, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But still, like the tools are there. It makes the game more accessible to people. If you don't want to use it, don't use it.
I've literally killed like at least two bosses just using my Ash of War.
Yeah.
Just using my little blood swipe thing because they're too fast and that's the only attack I can get off. Like,
oh no, wait. So are you talking about your weapons special?
That's what it's called. That's an Ash of War.
Oh no, that's an Art of War. An Ash of War is the summon. You get like actual characters you can summon.
God. Okay, maybe I've been misreading this thing the entire time. I swear Ash of War was the special thing.
We'll boot up Elden Ring right now. You can do it. But yeah, what I'm getting at is that you get people who, you'll get the hardcore purists to go like, no, that's not the right way to play the game.
Yeah.
How you have people in Formula One saying, no, you can't watch the sport, like, God forbid.
There's been people like that all the time. Like, even with Bloodborne, it's like, if you use the Axe Cleaver, you're playing on basic mode. It's like, okay, cool. Enjoy your game with your fucking whip sword or whatever. Who cares?
The cane. I like the cane. It's
good. Still haven't played with the cane, but every time I boot, because I've played that game, I think three times now. Every time I booted it up, and I'm like, I'm going to start with the threaded cane. I'm just like, nah, man. This sword cleaver is so good, though.
It's really good, yeah.
Yeah. I did move over to the Ludwig's Holy Blade for the last playthrough. That thing is...
Mm.
That thing's actually insane.
Is it a sword? Is it a hammer?
It just
Why
staggers
not
everyone. It's too much. It's so OP.
Oh, wait. So I'm thinking of... Yeah, it's like... It's either a small sword or a big sword.
Are you thinking
sword.
Of the Kirk hammer?
Yeah. Actual hammer.
Which is almost the same thing, really, to be honest. But Ludwig's Holy Blade is cool.
It's time for Bloodborne 2. Give us more of those trick weapons. Thank you.
We're going to get Bloodborne 2 before a 60 FPS patch.
Oh, no.
It's definitely going to happen.
Don't say that.
For this Checkpoint Chat, we talk about video games like Elden Ring and Bloodborne.
And Formula One.
And Formula One. Speaking of Formula One, I've been playing F1 22. It's not F1 2022. It's
just
now 22. EA is the publisher. Codemasters is still the developer because, you know, EA bought them, but they changed the name slightly. Ever so slightly.
Oh, so was it previously like Formula 1?
It was previously F1 2021 was last year's one. Now it's just 22. But when you boot up the game, it does do the EA Sports.
I can't believe they went back 2,000 games.
I know. Can you believe it? We thought we were getting a sequel. It was a massive regression.
It's a regression.
Yeah.
It's the prequel. So what are you racing in? Flintstone cars.
Yeah. I have to like wind up my feet on the floor to get going.
Flintstones game.
This game's good. It's Formula One. I think the one thing that maybe will, I don't know if it will bug people, but if you've played a Formula One game in the past, you know, year or two, especially the last two entries, you know exactly what you're getting into. It is the same. You know, has the career mode where you can pick a team and then rise up as just a driver, or the my team mode, which I really like, where you're a driver / team manager combo. So you're it's almost like like how you get FIFA and then you get Football Manager.
Yeah.
It's like those two concepts combined. Like I have to manage team finances and stuff like that.
But what's interesting is that you do get a Formula One manager, do you know? I think there's a game.
You do actually, yeah. Mm. Where it's like a full. I think that's probably up, more intense.
Yeah.
You're right. There's actually one coming out from the developers of, I think, Roller Coaster Tycoon Frontier. They're making F1 Manager.
Some exec went into that team and said, "You guys understand speed. We're going to put you on the Formula One."
And speed. That's exactly how that meeting went.
That's how that meeting went.
You're hired.
yes, Formula One.
It's good, yeah. I think the most drastic thing that has changed this year is not specifically thanks to the game. It's mostly due to the sport. Like, if you're unfamiliar, this year was the long-awaited introduction of brand new rules for Formula One. So, brand new designs for the cars. It's a whole new era of the sport. First time it's happened in like over a decade. And it's the most drastic change that has happened to the sport in a very long time. So that's why your cars, if you look at them from this year as opposed to last year, are completely different. And why you have teams like Mercedes, who dominated the past decade, struggling this season. And that, I think, made it very hard for Codemasters to kind of adapt that into their game and also like predict what was going to happen because, you know, the teams themselves, like, you know, they had all these designs. They throw it on a track and they're like, oh, this is not reacting the way we thought it was. And in that way, the game's actually very, very good, I think, in capturing what these new cars feel like. Like, for instance, they're much heavier. Their minimum weight has been raised. So getting them around like very acute or slow corners feels much harder because you're wrestling a much heavier car around a corner. And you've also got these aerodynamic changes where the car now handles much, much better when it's going very fast. But when it's going around slow corners, you just feel like you don't have the steering to get there. So I think for people who are really into, you know, playing this game with their racing sim setup and with like most of the assists turned off, it's going to be a real challenge to kind of like figure out how these cars work. Sure. But again, why this game's so good is that it has so many like assists and so many granular options to toggle on and off that you can really tune the game into what you want it to be. So like for me, for example, I'm playing on a controller, so I keep settings like traction control on because I just think that the triggers on a controller don't allow me to play properly without traction control. But I can keep things like braking assist and steering assist off. And I can keep my gearbox on manual if I want. And then I can raise the AI difficulty separately to those settings. So I can still have AI that is very, very challenging to race against, even though I'm being assisted on keeping my car on the track. So I think, I mean, that's been in previous games, but it's still really cool. Yeah, there's a new setting called AI, or it's called Assisted AI, I think it's called, or Dynamic AI, I'm not sure. But essentially what it does is it turns the game into more of a racing game. It keeps your opponents rubber banding towards you. So that you always feel like you're fighting.
You have to,
Because in a normal race, if I have one or two bad laps, the guy in front of me has gained 2 seconds on me. And the odds of me clawing that back are very small unless he makes a mistake. Whereas this one is more like a traditional racing game.
They're always within distance.
So for someone who's just, you know, wanting to have a good racing experience because, hey, they watch Formula One, but they're not into the simulation side of it, they can have that.
Those mainstream fans. At it again.
But again, that's what it comes back to what we were saying. I think that's so cool because I think so many people are now into the sport just through like watching Drive to Survive on Netflix and just watching it now that they come to this game and just want to have some sort of recreation of what they see on TV. And now they can have that.
I'd love to see sale numbers of
curious
these games
too,
because I'm pretty sure that year on year there's been like a significant boost following Drive to Survive when the first season when people started watching, well, more people started watching Formula One. And like you said, more people are like, oh, hey, I can play the game.
Yeah, I can relive in a game and it feels authentic at the same time. Yeah, I would like to know. I'm pretty sure, I mean, Codemasters has been churning these out year on year and they keep, you know, if not being reinventions, they keep being good. Like some of the best racing games you can have year on year. And that hasn't changed with EA. I I do think the omission. So last year they had a mode called Breaking Point, which was sort of like your story mode, where you had like, it was like a drama infused story mode where it kind of like took the behind the scenes drama that like Drive to Survive has and injected it into the racing.
Yeah.
So that's not there this year. Apparently it takes a lot of effort to kind of do that. And Codemaster says trying to replicate that year on year is just not possible. So maybe that means they'll have one next year. I don't know. That is, to me, is like a big omission, because if people are there for like the driver drama, they don't have that anymore. I didn't think that mode was particularly good last year anyway. So.
But people have voiced their concerns like, where is it?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now there's just stock standard. You can race a season or have a My Team season or race online.
Okay.
There is the EA touch to it where there's this new thing called...
microtransaction.
Yes. There's a thing called My F1 where it's like, oh, no. You've got this like showroom where you can purchase like supercars to display, or like purchase furniture and stuff to display in your virtual room.
Oh my God, I know.
And then players who you play with online will visit your virtual room. And also there's a season pass to unlock cosmetics.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, this is a full priced ass game.
What is going on here? Need a battle pass.
Yeah.
I mean, you could put a battle pass, but like, because you're paying the full price, make it a seasonal thing that it just keeps people coming back to play. You know, don't charge them.
It's wild to me. And what's weird is that all it ends up being is like a very pretty way to display like an online lobby menu. That's all it is.
Yeah.
There's no real function to it. So I just hate that it's the first menu option on the game. So whenever I boot up the game, I don't go straight to my career. I go to this garbage ass My F1 screen and I just hate it.
Yeah. So tone deaf on that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Did you see the tweet they put out earlier this week? There was that trend. So if you don't know, there was a social media trend where the formulas, you say they're a 10, but and you list like
a bad
attribute. So yeah, you tweeted like they're a 10, but they're only like single player game. Like, okay.
The funniest response to me was from Vince Zampella,
the
leader of LA DICE and Creative Titanfall and
stuff.
He was former Respawn.
He's now the head. Yeah, and his response is just an emoji of
like a face palm. He was just like, "Come on, man."
That was hilarious. I'm like, "You're employed by
this." You are literally. He's one of the like biggest. Like studio leads there, and it just shows you how stupid that was. Like
somewhere,
and also like one of their best selling games in recent memory is a single player
Star
game.
Star Wars,
Fallen Order.
Where like, did come a single on, player man. Game? No microtransaction. I laughed. I was like, somewhere a community manager has just got like hacked on.
I mean, if their goal was engagement, they maybe got a raise.
Perfect.
You know?
Yeah. Well, they did follow up after that, saying like. They quote tweeted and something along the lines of like,
we'll take this L.
Yeah, we're like, thank you for keeping us in check. Like, all single player gamers rock. Like, something like that.
Well, they were like, we'll take this L. The real reason is single player games are in 11 or something. I was like, okay, please.
Anyways, yeah, so that's EA. It's great.
Yeah. But Formula 1 22, it's good. It's not a reinvention, but. If you're looking for the most authentic way to experience these new cars, I think they've done a really fucking great job of like recreating that. And considering they can only work off data that teams give them, you know, which in itself can be inaccurate because the teams don't really know how it's going to react. So as an example, there's no bouncing or porpoising in these cars. Like if you've watched Formula One this season, you'll know those two terms where the cars generate so much downforce that they get sucked low to the ground, but then that cuts off their downforce, so they get sucked back up and the cars end up bouncing.
Oh.
It's been a real problem for Mercedes, particularly with the design of their car that they didn't think would happen based on the testing they had in their labs. But once they got on track, this started happening and they still haven't properly solved it. But it's not replicated in the game because based on preseason data, they had no idea that would happen. So...
Damn.
There's a bit of imbalance there, but at the same time, I don't think when I watched an interview with the game's creative director, he was like, I don't think players would want that anyway. Like the camera bouncing up and down, like as authentic as that is, you need a certain cutoff of this is not fun.
Diehard fans are like, give me the bouncing.
I mean, Hamilton fucking hates it. And I don't blame the dude because like he's bouncing in this car and hitting the ground, and
like constantly.
It's apparently sending 10G shocks up through his spine every bounce, and it's bouncing multiple times per lap. He's like, this is actually bad for my health.
Yeah.
Like, so yeah, no.
But is it only a Mercedes problem?
Mercedes has it worst. A lot of other teams have it, but Mercedes just cannot grapple around this issue. It sounds horrible. It does not sound fun.
My goodness.
So yeah, F1 22. It's good. If you're a Formula One fan, I think you've probably started playing this already because it's out. It came out yesterday.
You've played this already and you're asking, where's the porpoise mode?
Yeah, exactly. It's also got VR on PC now. That's a new feature. Oh my God, that's cool.
That is one way to grow up.
I think I'd love it. I really kind of want to try it.
But yeah, except, I don't know. My one experience with VR was when we were in, it must have been Gamescom. I played different game. I played Trackmania
with same. VR.
And that made me feel very nauseous. I was like, I do not like this one bit. This game is not great with
that's
VR.
That's because you're doing goddamn loop-de-loops in VR. Yeah. And you're watching it from they actually had it in first person. What made it worse.
Yeah. That was a one-way ticket to like,
Well, I mean, imagine your car's doing a 180 spin and your body is stationary.
Your brain's like, what is going on?
Yeah, I just... eject from the situation.
Or you seat it perfectly normal and then the game bounces and your brain's like, whoa.
Yeah, that's exactly why I think in Formula One, they're just like if your car's bouncing up and down and your body's stationary, your brain is not going to deal with that.
I guess I'll vomit now.
Yeah, exactly. So, very good. Good call on Codemasters in that front. Good. Just briefly as well, I touched Fire Emblem Three Hopes. This is the...
You touched the game and then that's it.
I just poked it very delicately. This is the Musou spin-off of... Well, the latest Musou spin-off of Fire Emblem, because there has been a Fire Emblem one before this, I think. Fire Emblem Heroes?
Is this?
No, that's the mobile one.
This isn't made by the same people who made the Zelda Age of Calamity, right? Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Koei Tecmo? I think it's them, yeah. But anyway, so it's good that you bring up Age of Calamity? Yeah.
Hyrule Warriors was Age of Calamity.
Because there was standard Hyrule Warriors before
on
3DS?
The Wii or the...
I think it was on the Wii U and then it came to 3DS and it was bad on 3DS. So this is in the same vein as Age of Calamity where it takes an existing story and kind of like
an alternate reality.
Sort of, yeah, alternate or reality. Alternate timeline. Yeah, this one's more like a... So I don't think it's a sequel to Three Houses. It's more like it is an alternate timeline. Like, what if this character was bad instead of good?
I know. Thing.
But I think what's cool about this one is that it has stuff outside of the kill 10,000 enemies with one sword swipe action in that you still choose like one of the three houses. And you align with them and you still have a lot of like dialogue between characters just based off my beginning, segments of the game.
Yeah.
So I think they've retained a lot of what makes Fire Emblem so enticing, especially the parts that people loved about Three Houses in the same way that when they made Persona 5 Strikers, they kept a lot of the social link and visual novel conversation stuff. And that's why I like that game as well. So, yeah, I think if you're a fan of Three Houses, but you don't really, vibe with the Musou formula, I think there's enough here to kind of, the action is still that very same one-note button mashy,
flashy
stuff. But I think there's stuff in here story-wise that will probably entice you. So,
or, and then the same breath, if you don't like the turn-based strategy of the original game, but you loved the characters in the story, maybe this is the one.
That's a very good point, actually. I really should get back to and properly play the turn-based one because it's apparently very good. It's a time thing.
Yeah, but I'm bad for this because I always say I don't have the time, but then I do play.
Fortnite.
I've been playing Fortnite. I put X amount of time into. I put 160 hours into Elden Ring.
160 only.
So my first character was 100 hours. Second character was 60 hours. So it was about 170. And then my next character was 10 hours. So 170.
Your three characters are like one person's playthrough.
Oh, well.
One normal person's
playthrough. Depends how thorough you are.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, I'm back on my Monster Hunter nonsense. So
that Monster Hunter cocaine.
That's gonna not to suck up my time. Yes.
Have you touched Sunbreak yet?
No. I'm very close to finishing the base game that I can get to Sunbreak.
Okay.
So point I'm getting at is that I say I don't have time for these games, and here I am playing these really long games. So
is Sunbreak out yet?
It's out. I came out on Thursday.
But you're playing on PC anyway. Yeah,
and it's funny because, I mean, you can with Fire Emblem, we can segue to Monster Hunter, unless you have.
No. I mean, I've only briefly played it. So I've been playing it during load shedding times, that and bouncing between that and Metroid Dread, which I'm nearly done with now. And boy, that game's good. Should have played it when it came out. Damn. Mm-hmm. Fucking great.
What were
game.
You thinking?
What a great Metroid. Okay,
I'll touch very briefly on, I mean, I spoke about Monster Hunter last week, but I'll touch very briefly on it. Still, so if you're listening, sorry, there's no video. We had no time to
obviously
set
that
up.
There's no video.
Don't worry.
I mentioned that at the beginning.
I'm still producing. I'm still time stamping and stuff. So I spoke about Monster Hunter briefly last week, and that is a case of, I've just started the game.
Mm.
I'm trying to rush through it because I really want to do the expansion. And in this case, it's not a matter of, you can just buy the expansion and then they give you a character to start there. It's like, no, you need your base character and you have to have rolled credits on, you know, the base game. So last week I just started Monster Hunter on PC and, man, that game really good on Switch, but on PC it's just
next level.
It's next level crack cocaine. You love to see it. But I'm actually nearly done with the base game. And what's funny is that when you rush through it, so just for context, when I played it on Switch, I put in 140 hours into it. And that is just me playing the game because I really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. I think I finished it in like 60, 70, maybe 80 hours. Rushing through the content now, like ignoring all the side stuff, I'm nearly done in about 22 hours.
Wow.
It's going to take me 25 hours to like finish the last few missions. But it's funny that even though I'm rushing it, it's still a 25-hour experience. I've been helped. Like I've had a good friend John Michael, who's joined me with his high level character to like, you know, rush me through those early hunts. But it's still a 25-hour experience.
It's a lot of time.
But what I was saying earlier is that I'm still playing it on Twitch now and then, because when load shedding hits, I'm just like, I'm gonna just boot up the same game.
Imagine
on
you had cross save.
Imagine that I would have
you could play your Sunbreak on PC. And then when load shedding hits, just be like,
just
cool, I'm going to continue on Switch.
Yeah, the world would have been nice. I mean, I would have saved, I mean, not that I'm complaining. I've loved playing it again, you know, the second time around. But in my head, I know it doesn't work like this. Mm. But I like to imagine that there's a file that is created on Switch. Why can we not put that file in the cloud and make it speak to the PC version?
I mean, I'm pretty sure. I don't think it's a technical limitation. I just think it's a, like, do we invest time into doing this type of thing? Which is
so
unfortunate.
Because I imagine there are a lot of people like me who played it on Switch and just have a PC and want to play it, you know, with...
Especially since it came out like 6 months or like a year later on PC. How many people playing on Switch would be like, cool, I want to buy it on PC
on
and
PC
just pick it up
just
again.
Pick it up again, yeah. Or I know three people. So me, a good friend, Dragon, and another friend, Adrian, who all loved the game on Switch, and we've just picked it up on PC again, but had to replay it to get ready for the expansion. The point is, I'm nearly at the expansion, and then this time next week, I'm sure I have some thoughts on it.
You know what the solution is?
Is to...
You just need a Steam Deck.
I need a Steam... Oh, God.
Could you imagine your life with the Steam
One
Deck
day,
now?
Your,
you
I
could
wonder,
just
Monster
play
Hunter
Sunbreak
runs on
and,
the Steam Deck.
I'm pretty sure it'd be fun because you're dropping that resolution so low. Like, if it runs on a Switch, like...
The
Steam Deck is light years ahead in terms of performance.
What I wanted to say is that the fact that this game played on Switch, even when it launched, I'll never forget how loading between areas and maps was actually so quick.
Mm.
And we joked at the time, we're like, wow, it's like the PS5. Like,
I remember,
the Switch just, it loads so quickly. Like, it's got the same technology.
Yeah.
And going back to Switch, the game still, I still love it. Like, obviously,
it's a good game,
it's 30 FPS, whatever.
Yeah, it's
but
a good issue.
It's funny though, because now I look at it, I'm like, man, it's kind of like blurry because the resolution's a lot lower.
Mm-hmm. That's how they maintain that 30 FPS.
Yeah, but that said, it's still a really, really good time on Switch. So, yeah, if you've got a Switch and you love Monster Hunter, Sunbreak is out now. So.
It's amazing, though. Like, I'm pretty sure because Monster Hunter has been huge. Like, Monster Hunter World was, like, one of the biggest games Capcom's released, like, ever.
Yeah.
So, I'm almost certain we'll get a new Monster Hunter.
Another one on PlayStation.
And World was the first RE engine game. Now, the work they've done with that engine.
On Switch.
Or just anywhere. Like, and apply that to a Monster Hunter that comes out on PS5 and Xbox. And, I mean, Monster Hunter World looks fantastic still.
Yeah.
I think it looks really good.
So, I never played World, but, I mean, I almost feel that Rise had limited functionality if you put them side by side. Like, I have seen some critique of, in this expansion, you know, some of the end bosses, they don't feel as epic as, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was made for a Switch. Yeah. It needs to still run on the lowest common denominator.
So I'm busy Googling now, but wasn't there a Monster Hunter on that NVIDIA
game?
I think I could be wrong, but I recall seeing or reading somewhere.
I would like the one thing, if there was a new Monster Hunter on, you know, modern consoles, and if there's one thing on that Rise did that I would love to see, like, if I had to go back and play World, are there Monster Hunter 6?
Monster Hunter 6, So, we don't have video, but for context, there was that NVIDIA leaked list, which had a whole lot of games, and people thought, that's crazy, half of those games are never coming out, except some of them have been.
I mean, they keep referring to this list when anything comes up. Yeah. Like, if you scroll up there, just like God of War and Uncharted Legacy of Thieves Edition coming to PC.
So this list does have Monster Hunter 6, and it's funny because on Capcom's side, there's Resident Evil 4 Remake, Street Fighter 6, and Dragon's Dogma 2, which have all since been confirmed.
Yeah, Kingdom Hearts 4. Monster
Hunter 6 is on here. It hasn't been revealed yet, but I imagine they are, like you said, working on
that's one of the most sure bets you can make. Because, like, there's a lot on that list that I really can't wait for. Like, they mentioned Bioshock Ray Trace Edition.
Oh, wow.
Made with NVIDIA. Like, I'd be super into that. But yeah, like I was saying, if we get a new Monster Hunter, the one thing that I think World struggles with now, if I go back to it, is its mobility. The wire bug in Rise is so good.
Yeah,
feels so good.
I've had conversations with John Markle because he loved World, and now he's playing. He played Rise when it launched on PC, and also loves it. But we were saying that it's a sort of thing where we love it. I think players love the wire bug for the mobility, but it's one of those things where the developers might go like, no, we're just removing it the next game to like reinvent the formula. But it's like, please don't. The wire bugs are so good.
The combination of the wire bug and like having your mount is just, it feels like I can get anywhere, anytime. Yeah. And just like scaling a mountain with the wire bug feels great.
Even the nature of Rise on Twitch, because it came to a mobile platform, but I mean, obviously I don't mean phones, but like Switch is handheld predominant. Those hunts were designed to be, you know, you get in, you know exactly where the monster is, you go fight it, you're done in 10 to 20, maybe 25.
Yeah, it's meant to be like smaller.
It's small sessions where I believe older Monster Hunter games, it was
much longer.
Much longer. And some of the systems I've heard of like were archaic, where, not archaic, but I mean, you have to find the monster's tracks and you have to find them. It's like, that's all been cut out.
That's how World works.
Yeah, which is, I'm like, that's cool. I just want to fight the monster, like cut the fluff. Let's just, you know, get into.
I think that's why I didn't really get into World. Like, I tried to play World, and at the time, I was playing when most people had stopped. So I chalked it up to, oh, this game's just better with friends.
Yeah.
But then when I played Rise, like, I was playing in parallel with you, but a lot of the time I was playing solo anyway. Yeah. So, and I still had a great time. So I think it is that. It's cutting down on the fluff that, like, oh, cool. I found tracks, or I found monster dung. Now I've got a trail to follow. Yeah. I don't care.
Yeah, but even on that, speaking of playing with friends, I think it's been interesting for me playing it so on PC so long after its original release, doing some of those hard level hunts, you can hardly find people to play with.
Oh, really?
Because, I mean, the game's old and people have obviously moved on to, you know, either the expansion or they're only doing like the top of the top hunt. I was working my way towards it. So what I'm getting at is, play these games are like best played at launch, because there's obviously a pool of people to play with. Because the way the game works, it's actually very smart of, and even this on Switch, when it worked, we're like, wow, Nintendo can't get it right, but Capcom got the multiplayer so right here. I don't know what sorcery they did, but I can go to my the hub and like literally choose the mission I want to do, and it'll search for other people doing the same mission and then load me into it. All the other way around, where I open up my lobby for people to join, like for the specific mission, and it just works.
And I remember when we were playing, like if you had missions that I hadn't gotten to yet, I could still play them.
No, if you're the same level, they do cut you off otherwise. But yeah,
but that makes sense, because otherwise
you'll die.
Yeah, you'll die.
Just die. So. Yeah, but I'm enjoying Rise. I'm very, very keen to get to expansion. Man, this is when RPG nonsense shines through, though, because I've been grinding my way through Rise, not really paying attention to gear, because like John Michael Michaels pointed out, the lowest level gear I get in the expansion will be far better than the highest level gear.
That's hard work. Yeah.
Well, it's funny because at the end of the day, it's just number crunching. I'm like, okay, that's fair. I guess I'll just grind through, not worry about, you know, putting together an armor set or...
It always feels, I mean, whenever I used to play Destiny, it always felt bad because it was like, I'd return to it and see my character like decked out and all the best stuff, like from the last expansion.
Yeah, and then...
and then I get like some basic ass green weapon and it's like...
It's like double level, the damage. And I'm like, whoa,
really? Come on. Like, yeah.
Well, this actually went on a lot longer than I... But last thing I'll say about Monster Hunter is that if you are looking to pick up the game and grind your way through the base version of it, Capcom do at least give you the tools to rush through it. So like right out the gate, you get high level armor and high level weapon. So those low level hunts are super quick. You can do them in like 5
just like checking the list. Yeah.
I mean, if you're new to the game, obviously you have to wrap your head around it. But
yeah,
you're doing... If your base weapon does like 80 damage, they give you straight up give you a weapon that does like 200 damage, whatever. So it makes a huge difference.
Nice. Okay, that's useful.
Yeah. Okay. Which, of course, you're going to get to the expansion, it's going to be useless.
Yeah, of course.
You're going to get a 1,000 damage weapon, low level. So I've played a bunch of that. And then this is the same case of you and Fire Emblem. I've literally just touched Sonic.
Just breathed
is it Sonic Origins?
Yes, Origins Collection, isn't it?
Origins Collection. I'm playing it on PS5. I think it's on everything.
Yeah.
I could be wrong.
Sonic 1, 2, 3, and Knuckles.
And Sonic CD, which I know nothing about. All I can say is that I literally jumped into the first level of each game to see what it looks like, and this is Sonic.
Nice.
it's OG Sonic, and I'm going to say that OG Sonic handles like butter. And it's the worst.
Okay.
It's not the worst, but it's definitely, you can feel like the nostalgia here because Sonic is all about going fast. And if you're looking to relive, you know, those childhood days of yours, this is a nice collection. It's got all 4 games.
Five. Well,
is it 5?
Sonic 3 and Sonic and Knuckles are actually two separate games.
I haven't dabbled enough in the menus, but I do know that there are some quality of life things. So you do get collectibles, for example, to like deck out. I think there's an island version of each game.
Oh.
So I haven't really...
Oh, is it like an overworld for you to access each game?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So there's almost like a title screen that you can scroll through. And then I have seen that, you know...
Oh, I have seen that. It looks animated really well.
Yeah. So it's like a modern version of, you know, that world.
Yes.
And I think there are collectibles you can get in the base game. But if you want the OG, you can play it on 4x3 as well. But it looks better widescreen.
Can you actually see more, or does it just zoom the camera in?
I was actually going to say, because I think playing OG Sonic, it feels a bit, I mean, obviously today, but back then it wasn't an issue. But today you feel like, oh my God, the screen is so square. Sonic is going fast. I can't see what's ahead of me.
Yes.
I think you do have more. To see where you're going.
That's better. That they.
I don't think that they've cropped it, but I mean, I haven't done.
God, because if they cropped it, that would be so much worse.
Yeah. It's not like it's a squished picture or anything. It looks normal, which I think it does fundamentally change how the game plays, because you've got more visual information to see where you're going. And I don't know, maybe part of the charm of Sonic is just going fast, not knowing that there's a spark pit down there. I don't know.
That's always what I've been like. confused about with Sonic. It's like it wants you to go fast, but at the same time, then you're throwing like caution to the wind and you can't get jumps right and whatever. I've never understood what's the ideal pace to these games.
I think that's also part of the charm, the way I imagine. Look, so I played Sonic, you know, as a kid in the 90s, but when I say I played, I never owned a Sega system. It was like at a friend's house or at a mall. Like, I think everyone who lived through the 90s has at least played the first level of Sonic.
Oh, of course. Probably. Green Hill Zone.
Did you watch KTV?
Yes.
When those people like forward, grab. Like, even if you didn't play Sonic, you watched
fucking
the first level.
To play Sonic like that. How dare
the input delay on that was.
Jesus. I thought LCDs were bad.
My God. But I think if you played it as a kid, that's where the charm comes in. Of like, say, if you know, for comparison, like the typical Mario game where there's a linear path from, you know, left to right. But if you explore, there is a hidden platform up top or, you know, below the main platform where there's more rings, whatever. And I think that the levels are designed that you probably could get from A to B super quick if you know, where to jump, where the springs are, that sort of thing. So, but it's old school. Like you can feel, like Sonic to me just feels very butterish, yeah. Which it's intentional, but it's just you can.
I'm curious to actually kind of give this a go after actually enjoying Sonic Mania, which I think is like the first Sonic game I really dug.
I never played Sonic Mania, but I imagine it controlled a lot better because it's modern.
Yeah, and I think they take into account like, okay, this is a widescreen game, so we're not altering level design or whatever. This is all, you know, in
it's
mind from the get-go.
Yeah.
Sonic Mania is great. You should give it a go.
I should. Yeah. One day. Yeah, that's, I've briefly dabbled with it, but.
Nice. Yeah. Cool. Those are games we've been playing. Should we get to game releases?
Oh, doing this my side for a change.
Oh, right, yeah. So we're looking at video games out from today, July 2nd, can you believe it? All the way up until July 7th? No, 8th. 8th, that's.
Oh, you've got two games.
Yeah, three games. Why is that one there? I don't understand. Okay.
We had this problem last week as well.
Well, F1 22 was out yesterday. But yeah, that's not out. But there's two games. Arcadegeddon? Is that correct? Arcadegeddon?
Arcadegeddon? I don't know.
Like Armageddon, but for arcades?
Arcadegeddon?
Mm-hmm. Okay. PC, consoles, no Switch.
Nah.
And then...
Glenoa.
That's that... Glenoa Fantasy Reverie Series. That's that...
Glenoa is an old...
The platforming game, yeah. Franchise.
Yeah, it's the cat, I'm gonna say, with the hat
platform
like,
video game series created by Namco.
Yeah, it's
1997. It stars Klonoa.
I remember this.
An anthropomorphic creature who explores dream world.
So if you were to see this character, you'd
like
probably recognize it. It's like it's a cat wearing a hat with Pac-Man on.
Of course, got to get that co-branding in there.
But the hat's got almost like it looks. Long.
This look, you know what this looks like? Bunnery from Pokemon.
Oh wait, sorry, that's ears.
The ears are like hands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I remember seeing this franchise as a kid. So now is this
I think this is like a remaster of that coming to Switch.
Isn't there a collection coming out?
That's this. I'm pretty sure that's this.
But is it only launching on Switch?
Yeah. For now, I think. Yeah.
Is an upcoming blah, blah, blah.
It includes Klonoa, Door to Phantom Isle, and Klonoa 2. I am trying to read from very far.
I'm like, where are you reading this? So it's a collection. Okay. Oh, yeah.
The first two games. So the PS1 game and the PS2 game. Cool.
What? Yeah. This version is based on its 2008 Wii remake.
What? Okay.
Oh, but look, yeah, it is coming to other platforms. I don't know why this only says Switch. Maybe they're launching it later.
Maybe.
Yeah, that's your very unbusy week.
Cool.
Of,
actually kind of keen for a new platformer. Like, if people lost their shit at this announcement, so really? Maybe it's like a, You know, it's a good platformer. I like platformers, so like I'm fucking into this if this is a good platformer. Yeah. I mean, speaking of platformers, we'll get to it in news, but did you see that they, I mean, this is also Namco, so they're bringing back that 3D Pac-Man platformer? Pac-World? No. Okay, let's just get into the news.
Okay.
News for the week. There was a mini direct. It was a partner direct.
Sorry, no. Again, no video feed.
Yeah, no video feed.
I'm busy watching outside.
There was a mini direct. It was a partner direct, so no first party stuff. Lots to talk about here, but since we're on the topic of Pac-Man, they are re-releasing the PS1 platformer. I think it's called Pac-World. Pac-Man World Repack. Nice. 3D platforming game that allows you to play as Pac-Man as he embarks on an adventure to save his wife and kids, who look very sad in their jail cell, according to Kotaku. Yeah.
This was like
Mario World. Like,
I played this.
Yeah, I played this on PS1. I distinctly remember playing this on PS1. And I remember on PS1, you see those platforms where you like run and then the wind will like...
Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it looks a lot better here. I'm pretty sure on PS1 it looked way more blocky. But
this actually looks like a really good platform. I remember playing it. I don't remember if it was good or bad.
I don't think I ever finished it. So I'm seeing shit here that I do not
Whoa,
remember.
Whoa, there's go-karting?
I do remember the pirate-themed world. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that's something that's coming to Switch. A new platformer starring 3D Pac-Man with arms and legs. Should have never happened.
Just before we get into the meat of the direct, how weird was it that they just dropped the video?
Yeah, it wasn't even live.
I'm like, oh, there's a directed 3. And then I'm like, where's the live stream? Like,
you
oh,
could just scrub that
it's
video.
It's the whole video. Yeah. Let me just read the timestamps. Oh.
Essentially.
Persona's coming to.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's go through this list as compiled by Kotaku here. We got Monster Hunter Rise Sunbreak footage again.
New trailer, yeah.
They've shown this game so many times. It's out now. So, yeah. Nier Automata, the End of Yora edition, which is like the edition with all the DLC. It's just coming to another platform. It's great. Nier Automata is really fucking good. So,
This was a PS4 era game, right?
Yes.
Yeah. You know how it'll run on
Switch. I'm curious. What's interesting, though, is that this port has kind of made people quite angry because this game is a PS4
game
type.
Game is getting angry? Well, no.
I mean, in this case, somewhat justified. So this is a PS4 era game, like you specified, and this isn't a cloud release. This is running native on the Switch.
On the Switch.
But the Kingdom Hearts games from PS2 are cloud versions.
Cloud version.
The people like Square Enix, what the fuck? How you managed to get this working, but the old ass like Kingdom Hearts games are cloud versions. Like, yeah.
Weird.
Makes sense. This is another Annapurna published title, Lorelei and the Laser Eyes, the real puzzle game made by the devs behind the music game Sayonara Wild Hearts. Some fucking, clout there.
Yeah.
Sayonara Wild Hearts, very good.
To play that. Yeah. Like the black and white style.
Very, very cool.
Super Bomberman R 2.
Yeah. Super Bomberman R was huge. I mean,
I've not played a Bomberman in a very, very
Super Bomberman
very
R came
time.
Out with the Switch. So I'm not surprised that it did well then.
Yeah.
Nice.
What's interesting is that I played Bomberman a lot. Was it on Game Boy? I mean, this was a game from my childhood. And Bomberman's really good. I've just not played a modern version.
I'm not super into them. They don't entice me, really. Yeah. I played a bit of the demo, because I was just like, well, I've got a Switch. I'm going to try everything out.
Yeah.
And I was like, eh.
Yeah.
Do you like the look of the character?
Really? Yeah.
Mega Man Battle Network. Legacy Collection. It's a collection of 10 Mega Man Battle Network games on the Game Boy Advance systems.
10?
It will be released next year. I somewhat remember these games.
I have no recollection of this.
Look, what is going on? Look at these isometric Mega Man games. It looks
all isometric?
I think so.
And what, all like turn-based strategy? Yep. Oh my God. There are 10 of them.
10. 10 games.
How did they make 10
See
games?
The epic saga through to its end.
That's a lot of game. My goodness.
Yeah. Looks pretty cool. People are hyped about this thing.
10 Sorry. I'm just That's a lot of games.
That's a lot of games in one collection.
I look at that collection, I'm like, oh my God, there's 10.
You take a look at it and you just want to take a nap.
Like, no, yeah, that's too much.
We spoke about Pac-Man World Repack. This one looks also really good. Blank, a monochrome rendered puzzle game.
Wow.
With animals, that, it looks beautiful.
Really
beautiful. So yeah, this was one of the highlights of the Direct for me. Just a real like monochrome hand-drawn style. It looks like Journey.
Is that just a dog hanging out with like a deer?
It looks like a dog and a deer, That looks like the Firefox emblem.
This looks like the game's going to make me cry.
Yeah, 100%.
One if not both, are definitely dying at the end of
one of those. February 2023.
This is the surprise announcement.
Yeah, Return to Monkey Island. Well, it had been announced.
But the
news here was that it's launching first on Switch for consoles. Mm. So it's out on PC and Switch later this year. This is Return to Monkey Island. We haven't had a new Return to Monkey Island in fucking decades. So original creator Ron Gilbert is back. So yeah, we finally got a look at the gameplay. I think I like the art style. I know it's divisive, but I think it looks.
Yeah. It's amazing. Switch just continues to be like the surprise platform.
Got Mario & Rabbids Sparks of Hope, a release date for the sequel to the XCOM-like Mario & Rabbids game.
Did you ever play the
I played original? The first one. I never really got into it. I know Jeff was super into it. He really enjoyed it. This one actually looks really good. Mm. I think I might be well into this one. And my God, the soundtrack, the three composers that the soundtrack are just unbelievable. Like the composer from Kingdom Hearts, you got Gareth Cocker who did Halo Infinite and Ori, the original Mario & Rabbids composer all teaming up to do this. I mean, just for the music alone, it's going to be pretty great. Yeah,
it looks awesome. Is that?
So it looked like Tony the Tiger.
Tony the Tiger. Yeah.
Frosties. The game's out October 20th. Little Noah, Scion of Paradise, fantasy RPG by the devs who made Dragalia Lost.
No idea what that is.
Cool. Another JRPG, Railgrade. If building train systems is your idea of a good time, as Kotaku would write. Cool. Looks like a railway simulator.
My goodness, on Switch.
Yeah, this seems like a bit much for Switch.
I love the Switch, but when it comes to CPU intensive things, I'm like, oh no. How's this going to run when you have a map filled with...
Just going to put so many fucking trains like colliding with each other.
Yeah.
RPG Time, The Legend of Wright.
Oh, is this... why does this sound so familiar?
Kotaku says, think Chicory, but with fantasy heroics. And that has kind of got me into it. It's like a...
Nice.
Hand-drawn style RPG. Okay, no, I'm not in. Based on this trailer, I'm not vibing with this at all.
Wow, cool.
This doesn't look like Chicory at all.
No.
Oh,
that's coming out August 18th.
Got another look at Sonic Frontiers, and it somehow looked worse on Switch.
I had no idea this was coming to Switch. Purely because it's Sonic of the Wild, which Breath of the Wild
look
is on Switch.
Look how bland it looks, man.
Yeah, on Switch it looks.
Like, you know, people give shit for Zelda not having a realistic art style, but this is why. Look how terrible this looks.
Guys,
like,
the Breath of the Wild art style is beautiful.
It's artistic. It's colorful.
This and it
just
works
looks
on Switch.
So weird. Like, look at that. Bleh, just browns and really muted greens of grass and
my eyes.
Nah, I'm not into this.
But it is coming to Switch.
Yep. Soon? Yeah, oh, this holiday season. Disney Dreamlight Valley. This is like, I think this is like Disney / Sims / Animal Crossing.
Animal Crossing, now, yeah.
Wall-E and Donald Duck in one scene there.
But again, this is coming to other platforms as well. I don't know how this...
Goes into early access on September 6th.
And if I'm not mistaken, this game is...
Yeah, I think that.
Early access available September.
Knowing Disney and knowing the fervor around like a Animal Crossing, like this thing's gonna.
It's gonna. Live Alive.
Live Alive.
Remake. Well,
yeah.
A 16-bit Super Famicom RPG is getting its Western release on July 22nd.
Yeah, first time.
I mean,
can play the first three chapters as part of a demo and carry over your progress.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I love these old school Square Enix RPGs, but there's just way too many of them.
Yeah.
There's so many. I'm like, I want to play this, but where?
This art style looks dope, though. I'm pretty into it.
Yeah.
I might play the demo, just give it a go.
Just see what it's like.
See what it's like. Live Alive.
Cool. What is this? Doraemon
Story of Seasons, Friends of the Great Kingdom. Jeez.
Nice.
One of the most influential anime IPs of all time, apparently.
I recognize this blue cat, but I've not ever seen this anime.
This looks like Stardew Valley.
It does.
Oh my God, there's a Stardew Valley. Oh my Stardew goodness, Valley, yeah.
Like an isometric Stardew
Valley. Yeah, an isometric Stardew Valley. So yeah, cool. That's cool. Minecraft Legends, which was announced at the Xbox showcase, it's a strategy, action strategy spin on Minecraft, similar to, what was the other one? Dungeons, which was like action RPG. So yeah, that's coming to Switch.
Cool.
2023. Nice. Dragon Quest Treasures, which is a spin-off from Dragon Quest, obviously.
I love how they've sold this game and will feature a pair of treasure hunters searching for loot.
Cool.
That's what it says in the box.
Two white-eyed young heroes.
What does that even mean? Cool. This is very cool.
Yeah, Portal the Companion Collection.
If you've never played Portal, because you've never had a PC or the PlayStation or Xbox. Is it on Xbox? I think it was.
It came to PlayStation 3. I don't think Portal 2 came to Xbox.
No. Well, if you've never played Portal, you know, one of the best IPs ever made.
Just phenomenal.
Portal 2, I mean, Portal 1, really good. But Portal 1 is a taste of, it's like 2-3 hours.
Portal 2 is one of the best games ever.
Portal 2 is hands down one of the best games ever made. Play this game.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's old enough that it'll run absolutely.
I still can't imagine playing Portal with a controller. Because there are maneuvers that are like,
you have to do,
flicking your mouse. Like
I've played Portal 2 once. In my whole life.
Oh, you need,
I need to replay
back.
It. Because it'll be like a whole new experience. Because I'm sure I forgot
it. I would recommend you play it again. And then there's a mod that is endorsed by Valve, which adds like new gel compounds and a third portal. So you're playing three portals.
Oh,
and it's
God.
Like a whole new bunch of levels. So it's a free mod that you download on Steam Workshop. It's very good.
That's insane.
Yeah. Harvestella.
How do Square
Another
Enix
farming sim.
keep putting out these RPGs? JRPGs.
Looks like a cross between the Tales games and Ruin Factory, which is essentially Stardew Valley. So.
Yeah. Do you like farming?
Hell yeah.
Do you like fighting monsters?
Hell yeah.
Well, there you go. Here's a game that brings both of them together. I'm just amazed because I need to go find an infographic that shows all the shit Square's working on, because I swear that direct after Sony conference, after everything, there's just new JRPGs. I don't know, it's there's so many.
That's coming to Switch on November 4th.
Mm-hmm.
Persona 5 Royal. So essentially we're getting Persona 5 Royal, we're getting Persona 4 Golden and Persona 3 Portable, I think it is, all coming to Nintendo Switch. Persona 5 is coming out on October 21st. They didn't specify when Persona 3 Portable.
Right, did he just Salt Bay that?
Hell yeah.
Right. So you've played Persona 5 on?
On PS5, yeah. I haven't played Royal, which adds more story content.
How will this run on Switch?
I think.
You think it'll be fine?
I think.
Because it's not, I mean, the art style is very
Yeah, it's a very stylized art style. And you're always in like very confined open space. Like, it's like wide open. You're in like hut.
Okay.
I think it's.
But I mean,
it'll be lower resolution for sure.
I know Persona 4 Golden will work because that is a PS.
That was a
P game.
Well, no. Well, it was PS2 and then PS Vita. Yeah. And then Persona 3 was PSP. Yeah.
Good lord.
So, yeah, no, those.
See, now this is the sort of announcement that gets me excited to play Persona because I say this, I know. I say I don't have time to put 100 hours on a PS5 or PC game. I'm playing Elden Ring and Monster Hunter. But
fair enough.
These games, long games for me, work better on Switch because I can really get through them.
Well, I got into Persona through Persona 4, and that's what I played on Vita. And I was just playing bits and pieces before bed. like a very long time.
For like 5 years.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Persona 5, I only got through it because like I essentially played nothing else for like 2 weeks during a December holiday. I was just in front of the PS5 playing Persona 5, and that's how I got through it. Because for the same reason. Yeah. Mm.
Good Lord. So that is the Nintendo Mini Direct. So there's some real nuggets there.
Mm.
But I'm dying for the first party Direct. Like, what are Nintendo working on themselves? But John, other bits of...
I don't know what this list is anymore.
This is hilarious. Well, I saw Persona. I thought it was the same news. But Persona and other Atlus games could become live action TV shows. And does this get you excited? It'll be TV shows with like 30 seasons.
Mm. I don't know. I mean, I think Sega's just like, wow, we managed to do it with Sonic. We could fucking do it with anything.
But you know that a lot of game studios are doing this, even Sony with all their movies now. It's like, well, shit, Uncharted movie like made money.
Mm.
Like maybe we're gonna bring every you know Sony movie to the silver screen or the big screen. Sega now also like, hey,
yeah. I'm just curious though because like Persona works because it's totally self aware that it's a video game.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say self aware. It's not fourth wall breaking, but there are so many components of it that work because it is a video game, like. If you just make a TV series of it, it's just a like high school drama.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or a high school drama with a weird otherworldly twist to it. I don't think there's anything special you can particularly. I don't know. I'm open to the idea, but I'm also just like,
I don't know.
Also, knowing Sega, they'll try make it, you know, like a PG-13 thing, and Persona deals with like pretty heavy things. Yeah.
So, I don't know. It'll probably be an anime? I'll envision it as an anime.
The thing is, they've released the anime. They made Persona 5 the anime. Like, an adaptation of the game across, like, an anime season. And it was fantastic. But, like, I don't know. Live action is a whole other ball game.
My God.
They should get Chris Pratt as the...
the as voiceless, the Joker.
Yeah, as Joker. Good Lord. Get him as Morgana, the cat.
Oh, my God. Okay, that's that. Let's get to the shit news of the week. Harassment means Ron Gilbert will stop talking about Return to Monkey Island on his blog.
Yeah, man, I don't know. So Ron Gilbert has a blog, obviously, and he's been chatting about his new game because he's super excited about it. And he just said he's shutting down comments on his blog and not talking about the game on his blog anymore because people are just real shit people and like...
People are dicks.
Yeah, people are just dicks and like... I assume this has come from, you know, having seen, you know, gameplay from the Nintendo Switch Direct and people like, oh, I don't like the art style or they're just complaining about things, you know, like we are getting a new Monkey Island game, period. Like the fact that we're getting one is insane.
Yeah. 20 years after the original.
Exactly. And like a completion to a story that we thought would just like stay the same. Like, you know, I don't know. Yeah, you can critique things, but when you're just a dick, like...
I mean, and I suppose in the same news, I don't think it's covered in this article, but God of War has also had some drama this week where Corey Barlog, the game's director, had to come out to be like, people just...
Stop being shit, yeah.
Stop being dickheads.
Yeah, it's just... Yeah, I think the Corey Barlog stuff was because there was so much expectation that there was going to be an announcement on June 30th. And it seems that there was. And at the like 11th hour, Sony pulled it. And they're just keeping it for another time. Not sure why. But at the same time, it's a fucking release date. Like, you do not... I know one of the game's cinematic directors, I think her name's Estelle... Blanking on her surname now, but she tweeted out saying she's received some like abhorrent stuff like dick pics and stuff like that in response to the release date not being announced. Like, are you,
that's just
what
like,
is wrong with you?
Yeah, I don't know. Gamers are, not all gamers, but some gamers are. Like, I don't know. I don't even know what to say.
Touch grass. Go touch some fucking grass. Reconnect with reality.
Reconnect with nature, yeah. aka reality.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Anyways.
Hope so the grass cuts you.
Oh, shit.
That's Send dick pics to the grass.
Touch the grass.
Yes.
Another new Sucker Punch clarifies that no one is working on Sly Cooper in this game.
Interesting.
Which, like you said, probably means they
were. Yeah, I mean, this comes, I think it was last week. There was murmurings that they were already working on something new. Of course they are. They're a studio. They need to kind of move on with their lives.
Mm.
And that the job postings seemed to indicate that it was a new Ghost of Tsushima. But like a lot of people like, you know, a lot of this could apply to a new Sly Cooper. But, you know, Sucker Punch very directly came out and said, we are not working on anything to do with Infamous or Sly Cooper. And on top of that, they can confirm that no other studios are working with that IP, which is, to me, more of a bummer. Sucker Punch didn't work on Sly Cooper, Thieves in Time. Mm. So you could easily get another developer working on that IP. So that's more of a bummer to me.
We've got two more. Half-Life 2 is already running on Nintendo Switch, thanks to Portal.
Yeah, so it seems like because of the release of the Portal Companion Collection on Switch, there was some stuff in there that was able to kind of like get Half-Life 2 running on Switch. Mm. Let's just see. According to Oatmeal Dome, the Twitter user who got this working, the game is running on top of the Switch's version of Portal 1. It's playable, but it's far from perfect. Only runs a few levels, crashes from time to time, and many sections aren't completable at all.
Mm. But I mean, so, okay, you can run Half-Life 2 on the Switch. I wonder if Valve will not put out a collection.
That'd be pretty cool. Half-Life Switch. I have only played Half-Life 2 last year. That game, still good.
Still real good. I mean, and again, it's an old PC game. It will definitely run on Switch.
Oh, absolutely. In some capacity. I mean, if Portal's running, then it will definitely. Yeah. Yeah.
Imagine that, a Half-Life collection with Half-Life. Shit, with all of them, that would be awesome.
Just you get two. Black Mesa, that new one, yeah. Up and running on there. Oof, hell yeah, I'm down.
Right. And then last bit of news this week: Blizzard confirms acquisition of, how do you pronounce it, Proletariat.
Yeah, Proletariat.
Aims to hire hundreds more in the next 2 years to support World of.
Yeah, so Proletariat were the developers of. I'm blanking on the game now, but it was some multiplayer magic battle royale game. And they on Tuesday basically said that the game was shutting down. And then on Wednesday, Blizzard was like, oh, we have actually acquired this the studio, who are based in Boston. They've been working with us since May. And they are like, they've immediately been put on supporting World of Warcraft and the upcoming expansion, which is what's it called? Dragon something.
Just on World of Warcraft. At what stage do they put out World of Warcraft?
Oh, that's never happening.
You think it's never gonna happen? No. Because I mean, how long can they support this?
God, as long as they can. I mean, they already overhauled the visuals, so it looks drastically different.
Yeah.
They can just do expansions till, you know, whenever, yeah. So.
I mean, World of Warcraft does still have an active player base, but
mm-hmm,
sure.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. I don't know. I'd like to see a World of Warcraft in my life.
Oh, the game was called Spellbreak. That's what it's called. And the expansion is called Dragonflight. And that's out in December, apparently. So, yeah. I mean, it's weird that they are performing acquisitions while currently busy being acquired. So. It's like Microsoft's doing secondhand acquisitions.
Yeah, we heard you like acquisitions, so we put acquisition.
Okay. Yeah, that's how it works.
Exhibit.
Yeah.
Working.
Exhibit's acquisition. Pimp my acquisition.
But yeah, that's all the news.
Cool.
Mean.
Question. If you want to send us questions, you can email us checkpointchatpodcast@gmail.com. Find us on all of our social platforms at Checkpoint Chat on Twitter, Instagram, everywhere, essentially.
All of the places. So when I put out the question this week, I prefaced it saying, hey, there might not be an episode because we're getting load shedding. Mm-hmm. You know, So we had a good pal, Neelan.
Neelan Nyker,
who, good friend, also works for Naughty Dog, who I think must be visiting South Africa, because he says, I have a question. How have you all lived like this for 10 years? I've been here 2 weeks and it's killing me.
Well, I'll tell you first this of much, all, it's been 15 years.
First of all, it's not 10 years. It's been 15 years on and off with load shedding. And how do we live with it?
You just grin and smile through the pain.
I don't know. Load shedding comes and it goes. And when it's here, I'm like, oh, this is shit. But then, you know, when it's not here, I just forget that it is.
It's a real abusive relationship because it disappears for months at a time and then it comes back and reminds you how terrible it is.
Yeah. And every time...
Every time it just says, sorry, I won't do it again.
Yeah. No, they really are. No, we fixed it.
No, you're not. You're the same piece of shit. You always were.
Yeah. And every time it happens, I think I need to have a plan B for power, you know, which, you know, it's either an inverter or this mm-hmm, or this. Mm-hmm. And then load shedding goes away and I'm like, that's fine. Like I can live without that backup power supply. Except this time I was like, you know what? I'm not going to spend money on an inverter because inverters can be expensive depending on what you want to do with it. Like anywhere from 7 to 20 to 30, whatever
Very
you want
expensive.
To do. I'm like, I don't really want to blow money on that. So instead, I wouldn't say no to a backup supply of power for my router. So
I mean, that's what I've had for the past year and a bit, and just having that... like sheds off like 50% of the stress.
If
I'll
at
tell
least
you that
have
much.
Internet, it makes it more bearable. And coincidentally enough, our delivery for that came today.
You love to see it.
You're typing on the show, it was me furiously messaging Lenska saying, hey, the delivery's...
it really helps, I'll tell you that much. Like, I mean, it's the reason I can still work from home on days, because even if, hey, my monitor's not working, I can use my laptop
use
and still have internet,
screen.
You know? So yeah. I can stream stuff off my laptop in bed. It's not ideal, but it's not the worst thing in the world. Worst, yeah.
But we live with it. It's a pain.
I mean, at the end of the day, like I'm not going to say I don't get angry at it. I get angry at it.
I get mad.
But you can't, there's nothing we can do about it. So you can spend so much energy being mad about it. And I do spend, especially this week, because it like literally affected my ability to review games. Like, I didn't have electricity in the evening, so I've had to delay my review for Formula One. Like,
we had stage 4 and 6, which is 3 sets of load shedding a day.
You've got less than 12 hours of electricity a day. Yeah, it's fucking ridiculous.
And look, it's funny because a lot of people say like South Africa's a frog in a boiling pot analogy, and I've always been like, that's a bit extreme. But in this instance, I'm like, I agree, because this is the week where I was like, man, I wish we had stage 2 load shedding. Mm. I should wish for no load shedding, but I'm like, I can deal with
this is
lower
the abusive
degree.
Relationship. It's like, I wish I didn't get punched in the face, only in the arm.
Punch me in the arm, it's
cool.
Cool. It's your Neelan. If you're here, hit us up. Let's do something.
Yeah, if you are in Johannesburg.
Johannesburg. We have a question from at Jared Brapra. Sent a question like 15 minutes ago.
Yo, asked, look at that. Just getting in.
Hey guys, how's it? It's okay. We've got load shedding. What abandoned IP deserves a revival? Which
blinks the time sweep.
I can merge these questions together. So we had another question from Mix. He asks, if you have the power, the means, and the money, which game would you remaster on any or all
blinks
platforms?
The time sweeper.
Knack 3.
Fuck that. Blinks the time sweeper.
So, I mean...
You ever wanted to play a game where you sweep up trash and then use that trash as projectiles? Also, you play as a cat who kisses humans?
What
fucking
platform
hell
is
yeah.
this on?
This was Xbox's attempt to create a mascot to rival like Crash Bandicoot.
Oh, okay.
This was their cat game.
Bring Blinks back.
Their time cat game. And it was awful.
Did they actually make that game?
Yeah, it was on the original Xbox, and they made a sequel. They were both bad.
Time to revive that bad
both
boy.
Good ideas. Like the idea of a platformer where you have like the ability to pause, rewind, stuff like that, but it just controlled so terribly. Just fucking shit. Okay, no, I wouldn't revive that. I'm actually trying to think of an abandoned IP.
Well, I had a thought this morning. It was funny, a knee-jerk reaction. Did you ever play the Jackie Chan PS1?
I did not. Was it based on the the cartoon TV series?
I think it was just Jackie Chan. Okay. And it was surprising. Look, maybe by today's standards, as an adult, I think this is a bad game. But as a kid, I love
Jackie Chan's also become
game.
A real problematic figure. So,
yeah, question mark. But at the time, that game was an action brawler?
Like a 2D side-scroller brawler?
No, it was like a top-down action game where you like just play through a story and you had combos and counters and it was actually really good.
Okay.
Like I would love to see a modern version of that. That's just my knee-jerk reaction.
I'll tell you which one I would revive for sure. There's actually two. I would kill for a new Wipeout. Like, give me a fucking
modern day wipeout.
We got the Wipeout, the Omega Collection on PS4 not long ago, but that was a bunch of
remakes.
They were so good still. Like, Wipeout was just so good. And on top of that, did you ever play a game, I think it was PS2 era, called PsyOps?
It rings a bell, but I don't think I played it.
It was like a shooter, but also, like, think Control, where you can manipulate the environment, like, you've got telekinesis and stuff like this.
Yeah.
But this was during the age where physics and games were just starting to get advanced. So they were like, well, let's just make this almost like a pseudo physics tool. Like you could levitate a door, get your character to stand on it, levitate the door again, and then move forward like you were surfing.
Oh, that's cool.
Like, let's put this on powerful hardware and see what we can do with actual physics.
Yeah.
Psyops is great.
But was that
I think it was on the original Xbox. I played it on the original Xbox, and I think it was on PS2.
I think with the PS Plus collection being, you know, PlayStation has its own Game Pass now. And one game that people always talk about is Siphon Filter.
Ooh.
Now, that's a game I played as a kid. I missed the first one, weirdly enough. I played 2, like, way too many times, and I remember playing 3 as well. So I have vague memories of those games. Let me play remakes of those.
I don't know
what it would look like, but I love those games.
A full-on remake of the first one would be pretty sick, I think.
Siphon Filter was, I'd argue, one of the first cover-based shooters. Do you remember Siphon Filter? If you like, you don't snap to cover, you stand behind a wall and you step out. Yes. And it's like, whoa, this
Holy
is amazing.
Shit. The bullets don't hit me through this wall. What was the main character's name? Logan?
It's Logan something.
Logan something. I guess another one is, but it's not really abandoned because, well, we keep being told that there's a new one being made, but Splinter Cell?
Siphon Filter is probably like the pre-Splinter Cell.
We haven't had a new Splinter Cell since, I think, 2011. Like, yeah, come on, I'm dying.
It's time.
I'm fucking dying.
I have to believe at some stage Ubisoft will, if not remake, like the first trilogy, just give us a new one.
And what's annoying is that the last Splinter Cell was good. Like, it was fucking good. Like,
God damn.
Just give me a new one. Just give me that Sam Fisher.
Just give me the sound of those goggles. and then last question
they do that and where it's a fucking rabbit's wearing that.
I mean, I wouldn't put it past that.
Oh, God.
Last question from Esville, who asks, what is your favorite game OST? And then follows that saying, this might lead to discussion. Well, you're not wrong, because we could probably...
Jesus, that's so hard.
I mean, I don't have a favorite. I have favorites. So...
Okay, let's try and make this spicy then. You have to choose a favorite. Okay, so list some of the ones you like.
So I love Ori and the Blind Forest. Mm-hmm. I love Final Fantasy VII Remake soundtrack. Oh,
banger, yeah.
Hades had a great soundtrack.
Anything from Darren Korb. All the Supergiant ones are really good. Journey from Austin and Winter.
Journey, yeah.
Chicory's
one. I really like that. I was just going to say Chicory's soundtrack.
Is it Lena?
Lena Rain.
Yeah. Her Celeste one. Yeah, her Celeste really one, just incredible. Yeah. Gareth Cocker's Halo Infinite one's very
Halo
good.
Halo is really good, yeah.
Yeah.
But if you
Castlevania Symphony of the Night's very good.
That when you told me you were playing the game, I went and I dug up the soundtrack.
It's so good.
And I was like, yeah.
Castlevania ones are fucking great, are really actually. Good. Like, if you listen to Rondo of Blood, like, just really good music.
My goodness. If I had to choose one, though, the one I've probably... and Celeste.
Mm-hmm.
Choosing between them...
Celeste
is
a banger,
Right now, I'm going to go... Celeste, just because I don't know, probably listen to it more.
I think Celeste is up there as one of my most listened to, probably next to Journey. Journey's the one that still gives me like the feels.
Yeah.
You can listen to it and still get those little, most of them do, the little tingles.
Yeah.
Like I listened to Final Fantasy VII's the Remake. Scorpion Boss one, and it's just unbelievable.
That soundtrack, if you guys don't, I mean, if you don't care about Final Fantasy VII Remake, let me tell you, that soundtrack is 6 CDs.
It's so long. It's like 5 hours.
Four to five hours. And
they're all good.
It's all good. It's a mix of new music and reimaginings of original songs. And when I say of original songs, I mean, there are tracks on that soundtrack where it's like, you'll listen to it and go, oh, it's this song. And then they'll introduce a beat from another song. And then they'll introduce another beat. It's like, oh my God, this is three of the original songs like remixed into one.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah. And it's interesting because you haven't played the original. I'd love to sit you down and like, hey, listen to this.
Yeah.
And then show you like, now this is the Shinra theme with the Turk theme with like the victory theme.
It's I think that's why you get so much out of it, is because you can like dissect those layers.
That Genova's theme, so you'll remember the fight where you're fighting Genova, and it's got hints of the original song, and then you get to the next phase of the boss fight, and then like the original song
like kicks in.
It's so good. I'm like, this is genius. And I don't know what the next game soundtrack's going to be like, because they've like thrown everything in the kitchen sink into this one. So yeah, good.
I've listened probably the most overall to like all of Darren Korb's like OST, just like Bastion and Transistor.
Those are good.
Even Pyre, that, you know, Pyre, I haven't properly played the game, but I think that soundtrack is like,
it's really good.
So it's probably between like Pyre and Hades, and I think Hades edges it out, because I think Hades is like his best one of the four.
Yeah.
What I like about all four of them though is that they're all different, like almost like genres.
Mm.
Like Hades, you can always tell it's Darren Korb, like it's his OST. He has a certain style to his music, but like you just compare Bastion, which has got a real almost like oriental Middle Eastern vibe to it, to like Hades, which is almost like metal. It's just incredible. Must also mention Doom. I don't like the second game's OST as much as I like the first, but the first one is pretty
good. It's really good.
Yeah.
Gaming music.
It's good. Like all the Souls games are very good OSTs as well.
Oh my God. So cinematic.
Yeah.
Like you'll listen to a song and go, oh my God, this is that boss fight.
Oh my goodness.
I feel my heart pumping.
Same with Bloodborne's one. Bloodborne's is just eerie and good. Like it's very good music to like work.
Also scares you a little bit, but that's fine. But cool. That's all the questions this week. And that's good timing because we've got 15 minutes till load shedding. So that's a good time.
If you sent us questions, thank you again. Great little batch this week. Enjoyed that. If you want to be part of that, you can send us questions. Checkpoint Chat. Checkpoint Chat Podcast @gmail.com.
The longest email address.
You can also find us on all of our social platforms at Checkpoint Chat.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been episode 191. Checkpoint Chat.
Again,
if there have been audio issues, I have no idea if that is the case. Apologize, but we did the best we could to actually even get this episode done.
Thanks, Escom. Yeah,
thanks, Escom. You're real great. I love you. Yeah. Love you long time. That's been episode 191. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks for sticking around. And we will be back next week. Until then.
With or without video.
With or without video. we don't know. Until then, goodbye.
Goodbye.